Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You are listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
Before. It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best in new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X.
Good morning, welcome to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there, you can also download the podcast later and listen at your leisure. This show is all about science in all its different forms, and we do play some rather cool music as well. Got Julian Pauly live in the studio. We'll be talking to our PG later in this hour, all being well. Our guest speaker for this week, and indeed whenever there are five Saturdays in the month, it's Phil Lovett from the Max Ben Swinton Astronomical Society. I'm just waiting to hear whether he can join us, and he'll be talking about what he's been up to, particularly photographing the C2025K1 Atlas comet, which apparently was a smudge in August, but now it's not. More of that later. First up, a bit of a story about peanuts. Our Chris might be interested in this.
Yes, peanut allergies have plummeted in children in the US thanks to early exposure during infancy. A study in the journal Pediatrics shows that since 2017, when the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases formally recommended that parents introduce common allergens to children under three. Peanut allergies have fallen by 43%. Allergies rates for all foods have dropped by 36%.
Now interesting. Then. And, climate of the party's 30. Finished in Brazil, didn't it, earlier this week, I think. If you want to understand the nitty-gritty, have all the key outcomes agreed or not in and around COP 30, Google Carbon Brief, which is a publication that summarises a lot of environmental issues very well. It's produced an exhaustive online guide to every agreement and every disagreement from across the recent 11-day summit in Brazil. In summary, key outcomes are a voluntary plan to curb fossil fuels, a goal to triple adaptation finance, and new efforts to strengthen climate targets. A lot of disarray around that. Let's see what happens next.
Yes, this is about half of the jobs in America could be replaced by artificial intelligence, according to a report by the McKinsey Global Institute.
Food for thought, eh? This one is a cracking article. Winemakers warm to sake de Bordeaux Bordeaux's latest bottles were opened on 24th of November. I think that was Monday, or Tuesday. But they do not contain wine. Instead, connoisseurs will get a chance to sample the first ever sake from southwest France. Sake de Bordeaux, launched this month, is being touted as a refined drink, ideal as an aperitif or to accompany seafood, white meat and ham. Japanese national drink, of course, is sake, has been hit by a 70% fall in domestic sales over the past 50 years, but exports have more than doubled since 2014, and top chefs in London and Paris now serve it. Basically, they're saying sake is the new wine, a Michelin Food Guide report said 2 years ago. Now, Tumu Oda, who's 50, the creator of Sake de Bordeaux, said that the drink is not a strong distilled spirit downed by inebriated middle-aged men, but a fermented rice wine of about 15% alcohol by volume, traditionally enjoyed with a meal. Young Bordeaux winemakers have been broadly receptive, particularly because the region is facing a crisis echoing the sake slump in Japan. Wine sales are not going up, and we in Bordeaux, in France, need to diversify. So he says it exemplifies the globalization of sake. Tomo Oda left Japan as a teenager and developed a taste for the drink while working for the Wine Society in the UK. At an international wine event, he sampled the rice wine from his homeland and was mesmerised. Tomo Oda left Britain after Brexit and studied sake brewing in Paris and Hiroshima. He was also counselled by Marie Chiba, a celebrated sake sommelier. So Tomo Oda made Bordeaux his base because it's a city of fermentation. Sake is also a fermentation drink. Another reason he set up there is the exceptionally soft water. Who knew, eh? He uses three different types of wine yeast and organic rice from a farm in the Camargue region of southern France, which, like many Asian producers, uses ducks to weed fertilizers and get rid of pests. The rice is polished 80 times to make it fit to make sake. It is not the cheapest rice, he said. He makes a still sake reminiscent of white wine and a second touted as faithful to the Japanese tradition of complexity and purity. Both his sakes will sell for between 25 and 35 euros a bottle, and his sparkling sake will be between 35 and 45 euros a bottle. And as I said, his bottles made their first public appearance at the grand tasting of the British Sake Association on Monday, the 24th of November. So watch this space, how the world is changing. Climate change, eh?
Elsewhere in the news, nuclear plants should be built closer to urban areas, a task force commissioned by the government has concluded. The government has pledged to overhaul Britain's overly bureaucratic nuclear regulations after the independent task force found that unnecessary red tape had contributed to spiralling costs and delays building new reactors.
Interesting stuff. And elsewhere in the news again, patients with aggressive leukaemia have been offered hope of a cure by a living drug that is being rolled out on the NHS. The treatment involves genetically modifying the patient's own immune cells in a lab, then returning them to the body where they attack and kill cancer cells in the bloodstream. The drug called Obe-cel, that's OBE-CEL, was developed in the UK by Autolus, a spin-out company of University College London, and it has shown wondrous results in trials.
Wow. Milkshakes and lattes will be hit by a sugar tax for the first time as Labour attempts to tackle obesity and improve the nation's health.
Yeah, but I don't think that's until 2028, I think I picked up on the news. So yeah, it takes a bit of time to come in. As you can imagine, the retailers won't be very happy about that. And looking further north, an initiative between the RSPB and three major whisky companies has been launched to restore peatland on the Scottish island of Islay. Suntory Global Spirits, Diego and Glen Morangie Company have collaborated with a charity to transform 1,000 hectares into a thriving blanket bog, which is vital for carbon sequestration as well as biodiversity.
Mm. Ooh. England and Wales have lost almost a third of their grasslands, including wildflower-rich meadows, over the past 90 years. A study of maps from the 1960s has suggested Children and students took part in a second land use survey of charts marking out Britain's grasslands, wetlands, heathlands and other habitats, along with urban development and farming.
And the number of monitored bathing sites in England meeting minimum standards for water quality has risen slightly since last year, according to new figures from the Environment Agency. Out of 449 sites regularly tested this summer, 93% met minimum standards for levels of bacteria in the water linked to sewage spills, agricultural pollution and other factors. That's a 1% increase from 92% in 2024. Some might say there's still a long way to go, though. And on that note...
Meanwhile, new legislation has been passed to ban the sale of plastic-based wet wipes in England by spring 2027 to stop them being flushed down the toilet and causing fatbergs in our sewage system. Many retailers now sell so-called biodegradable wet wipes instead of plastic-based wet wipes. But according to researchers in the University of East Anglia, these can still cause problems because they don't just dissolve and disappear. Quite often, biodegradable wet wipes stay intact or they become a mat of disgusting oils and fats. So it is vitally important that you do not flush any type of wet wipe, even biodegradable ones. Bin them.
Interesting. And finally, minerals. I thought this was an absolute belter of a story, and I would say, who knew? Who knew about all this?
Yeah,
why has nobody told us before?
We thought it was tin.
And finally, minerals from the southwest could play a big part in a strategy to reduce the UK's reliance on using foreign imports. The government's new critical minerals strategy aims to produce 10% of the UK's mineral needs domestically, along with a further 20% through recycling products by 2035. Demand for critical minerals such as lithium, copper and tungsten is set to increase over the coming years due to their use in items including mobile phones, laptops and cars. China currently dominates global critical mineral production. The UK, however, has a unique geology. Europe's biggest lithium deposit is in Cornwall, and one of the world's largest tungsten deposits is in Devon. Amazing.
So happy, I can see the same things happening here today. A show of strength with your boys' brigade. And I'm so happy and you're so kind. You want more money, of course I don't mind. To buy nuclear tanks was for atomic wines. And the public gets what the public wants. But I want nothing, society's got some going underground. Some pleasure to hate me. I've had enough already on my plate. People might need some tension to relax me. I'm too busy dodging between the flags. You see, here's what you get. You made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leaders and place your trust. As their lies wash you down and their promises rust. You'll see killing machines with paper rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give up the society wants. I'm going underground.
Going underground by the jam there. And we played that because talking about the fact that the UK's got unique geology, which will definitely help us with the government's new critical mineral strategy. Who knew, eh? You are listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We should have our PG on the line. Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
Good morning. So the cat tried to scupper your interview this morning, did it?
It did, yeah. And I quickly slip out of my flippers and my snorkel after I've been chasing him around in pouring rain.
I know, it's not very nice out there, is it?
It's a lovely day.
It is. I'm sure you're going to cheer us up, Paul. What's caught your eye in the science news this week, then?
Well, I think, interesting, a bit of a link towards what you were talking about, the chase after world resources. And we talk about minerals, and we have done it at length over quite a few shows. We've talked about the demand for particular minerals and things, but there's also a demand for the people to utilise and to develop those kind of things. So, on the local news front, Sheffield University have a couple of initiatives. One of those is to try and find the future engineers for the world's first fusion plant. And they think that they could quite well be found through a UK schools programme. And it's to inspire the next generation of fusion energy scientists, engineers, technicians, project managers, launched on the 25th of November by the University of Sheffield. And it's a UK-wide schools programme to spark interest in fusion energy and show the possibilities of what can be achieved with clean, green energy.
Wow, very interesting.
It's called STEP, all in capitals, STEP, Forward, and it'll educate children about technology and career opportunities for young people in the clean energy sector. So that programme will be key in building a long-term skills pipeline for the fusion power plant, which is expected to create over 8,500 jobs. So developing that new sort of workforce for the future. And the programme is developed by University of Sheffield's Make a Futures team, to enable and support primary school teachers to deliver sessions across a wide range of topics which underpin the cutting-edge science and engineering required to develop the UK's infrastructure for fusion energy. So it's part of a government initiative spending £2.5 billion investing into fusion energy and the 2025 Industrial Strategy Clean Energy Sector Plan. So a great step forward, getting young people in school interested in a clean, green future. So I thought that was pretty good news.
Yeah, brilliant.
They've got another initiative, and the starter for me, I guess, I read a book back in 2003 by an author called Mark Haddon, and it was The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night Time. And it was about a young man sort of going about his business, and a bit of a sort of a murder mystery of sorts, but it sort of touched on a character which these days would have been called neurodivergent. So basically a degree of autism, and I thought, well, that's kind of an interesting thing, because nowadays that neurodivergent covers things like autism, ADHD, dyslexia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, dysgraphia, Tourette's syndrome, synesthesia, epilepsy, Down syndrome, and different ways that the brain functions that occur naturally. So, and we talked brief about music with artists who experience sounds as colours, that's synesthesia. And you've got people who can't deal with numbers. You've got people who can't deal with sound. And the sort of second area, I think, to the university have got involved with is really is about research which has tackled employment barriers for neurodivergent people in South Yorkshire.
Oh, wow.
So the university research project aiming at tackling the employment barriers for neurodivergent people has been awarded a share of almost £2 million funding from the National Institute for Health and Care and Research, NIHR. So the interdisciplinary team is going to work directly with neurodivergent individuals, employers and policymakers to evaluate existing support, understanding lived experiences and developing a plan to address real-world workplace needs. So this is part of the government's push to get people who may be blocked from entering the sort of workforce opportunities to survive and prosper in a world that sometimes doesn't understand their kind of particular mental process, and so feel that there's something that estranges them from us. So it's designed to address the significant employment challenges faced by these people, and it's part of the Work and Health Research Initiative to help reduce health-related economic inactivity. So, yep, there is a kicker there towards the prosperity of the country, trying to tap this resource, which quite is blocked from entering the workforce. Professor Megan Freeth from the University's Faculty of Science said, changing employment systems and employer behaviour is key to this. I'm excited to work alongside neurodivergent people to find solutions to employment barriers that create better work opportunities. So, really good to hear that we can sort of try and help these people to have a bit more possibly fulfilling life. And the government's recent Keep Britain Working review found that compared to 2019, there are 800,000 more people who are unemployed due to health conditions. So, and the sort of neurodiversity is called a health condition, I guess, within that scope. And they cost that, they estimate that cost the UK £85 billion each year. So,
yeah, it's a lot of money, isn't it, Paul? Wow.
Yeah, a couple of million to support that initiative. Yeah. And again, great work from Sheffield University.
Amazing, and all geared up to young people. You know?
It's looking to the future, and I think it's one of those things that unfortunately we're in that trough at the moment of feeling today and having to think about the future. And I think that it's nice to see some positive initiatives about the future rather than the doom and gloom that we tend to get.
Yeah, but University of Sheffield, right, I was talking about this the other day, they're right up there. I think they're ranked number 13 now, top universities. Yes. And the research calibre and the quality of the research is just seems to be going up and up.
Yes, it's absolutely good news, I think, in the area. And the science park and lots of other things helping to put things forward. So I think if you sort of are a bit sort of fretful and you're not quite sort of comfortable, I read a great article in the iPaper from Anna Bonnet, and she's talking about 12 simple ways to reset your nervous system.
Ooh. Sounds like the 12 days of Christmas, that Paul.
Okay.
It's interesting, but I say sometimes you can be tense for different reasons. So the first sort of suggestion that she makes is to eat something sour. Grab a wedge of lemon or a sour sweet or even a drop of vinegar. All can give you that sharp tang that cuts straight through panic and snaps you back into the present. It's a full body jolt that interrupts looping thoughts and reminds your brain that you're here, alive and okay.
Wow, it's like smelling salts, modern smelling salts then.
Yeah, so, and that's something from the Amber Fieldgate, who's a psychotherapist in Edinburgh and a member of the counselling directory. They also say that actually remaining very still can amplify poor thoughts and poor processes. So they recommend the engaging in what they call micro moments. So stillness can amplify the issues, but if you slowly roll your shoulders, stretch your hands, or gently sway from side to side, these small intentional movements stimulate proper proprioceptive feedback.
Feel better already.
The joys of live radio, Paul.
Yes, the problems of being a scientist without a scientist's dictionary. I often do this, she says, by herself, and it's particularly useful when you're sitting at a desk or in traffic, barely noticeable to others, and yet psychologically calming. By shifting muscle tension, you release subtle adrenaline build-up, helping to control your feelings at the time. And third one they say is to avoid deep breaths, which is contrary to popular belief, and it's one that sort of struck me, because that is something that I've always thought as being a calming thing to do. But, it says that they can signal to the brain that it's not safe and keep the body on high alert. So nasal breathing is a gentle way, in a gentle way, sends the opposite message that the body can relax. So a simple and powerful way to calm yourself down and regulate your nervous system is to breathe light, slow and low through the nose. Breathe light means reduce the noise of your breath. Breathe slow means to reduce the number of breaths per minute. Aim for 6 to 8. And breathe low means into the diaphragm, so you feel your ribs expanding. And do all this through your nose and lengthen your exhales. That came from Ramon Ghosh, who's a breathwork teacher and founder of the London-based practice Evolved Breathwork. So they next say is put your feet up, which is sounds a good one for me.
Not for the cat, maybe.
No. But lie on the ground with your legs up against a wall while breathing out slowly. You may feel silly, but doing this is quite literally grounding yourself. Also, having your legs up shows your brain that you can't be in danger because it's not a position from which you can run or bite.
I like it.
Brilliant. That's from Dr. Anna Colton, who's a clinical psychologist from London. And then there's do the Simba swizzle, they call it. Your vagal nerves make up your system's part of his nervous system, and they're carrying messages between your heart, brain and digestive system, and there's a specific place on your outer ears where the vagus nerve is closest to the surface of your skin. It's known as the Simba concha, and it's possible to massage this area while you activate your vagus nerve. And to do it, place the tip of one of your fingers into the front of the top of your ear and gently massage this area with your finger in a circular direction. Oh, I'm relaxing already by doing that.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, we can't do that, Paul, because we've got headphones on, unfortunately.
Yeah, some things work, some don't. But that was Dr. Ravi Luca, who's a medical director at the private healthcare firm Bupa. Next thing that they say is to practice auditory reset. So that's something we can do. On here, our hearing's directly wired to the nervous system, which is why certain sounds instantly soothe or irritate us. We know that with our music preferences, don't we? Sometimes.
We do. If I hear a screeching opera singer very, very high, it really, really annoys me.
Yeah. It says, focus on identifying three distinct sounds, one at a time. And by doing this brief auditory exercise, it pulls the brain from internal noise to external awareness, quietening the stress response. So this is Dr. Suzanne Wiley recommending that. And if you're feeling stressed, stop what you're doing and blink slowly for 30 seconds. So another suggestion is chewing. Whether it's on gum or a crunchy snack can help you to regulate your nervous system in minutes. The repetitive motion activates the trigeminal nerve, which links closely with the vagus nerve, which we've just been talking about, signaling safety again to your body. And a few minutes of rhythmic chewing or focusing on the sensations can lower muscle tension and ease the fight-to-flight charge and help you feel more settled. That's Charlotte Bailey, a psychotherapist in Stockport. Who's also a podcaster, apparently. You can float your shoulder blades. So tension around your shoulders, which I know I get from time to time, can be a signal to your nervous system that the body's preparing to defend itself, putting you in a tense state. And to help, sit or stand comfortably and imagine your shoulder blades sliding down and away from your ears. It's funny, my shoulder blades aren't up there, but or as if you're floating in warm water, make sure you keep your breathing slow and natural. And many people try to correct posture by pulling the shoulders back, and this can actually increase tension and alertness, allowing shoulders to soften instead, reduces upper back effort, frees the breath, and gives the body a clear signal to relax. And again, it's something quite often when I talk to people about doing voiceovers. If you are sat down cramped and you fold your body forward, it increases pressure on your lungs and it changes your voice. So to find a comfortable sitting position, or even better, quite often a standing position, means that if you're trying to do a voiceover, you can be a much better controlled and more appropriate version of the voice that you want to produce.
Ooh.
Yeah, so interesting stuff. And humming is the other thing, which, again, sometimes naturally you do that. You don't even realise you slip into humming along with a tune or whatever else it is. But humming vibrates that good old vagus nerve again.
Oh, everybody's going to be looking for the vagus nerve
now.
Not
the Las Vegas.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people grasping their ears and wandering around with a smile on their face.
Massaging their ears and dropping their shoulders.
Humming stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system, they say. So try closing your mouth, which is dangerous for me. Put your tongue on the roof of your mouth and make a low hum sound. You can try doing a song if you like, which may be good for you, but it may not be good for the folks around you.
No, my friend Claire, when we were in, I think, junior school, she used to do that in the dining room. And because you weren't moving your mouth, the dinner ladies didn't know who was doing it. It drove them mad. Not to be recommended, folks.
Well, that was a recommendation from Kieran Douglas, personal trainer at Nuffield Health. And, sketch your environment is another thing to bring you back to things, and that, I think, is one of the things that happened in that book I mentioned from Mark Haddon, as a young chap sketched things out to help him control his sort of reactions to the environment around him. Doesn't have to be a masterpiece. You can doodle on the back of your notepad or sketch or, yeah, don't draw on the furniture or the walls, kid. But take time to pause and regard your environment and do something creative can lower your amount of stress hormones in your body, reduce your muscle tension and tighten any niggles in your mind. Focusing for 5 minutes on this task in hand, on the task at hand, rather than what you think you should be doing, may even leave you with a nice piece of art at the end.
Ooh.
That was Dr. Ravi Luca. Strangely, yeah, gargle. Preferably not one for the office. Best practice in your bathroom in the morning or the evening, and ideally with an empty stomach. Gargle until you gag or until your eyes water. This will reset your vagus nerve again and activate your parasympathetic nervous system. Rinse and repeat. So Susan Smith, who's a psychotherapist in Beckenham and Kent and a spokesperson for the UK Council for Psychotherapy. And again, just what I said, try the slow blink. If you're feeling stressed, stop what you're doing and blink slowly for 30 seconds. This is a cue of safety. Our bodies can only do it when you feel calm, and it gently signals to your nervous system that you're not under threat, says Anne Mather, a psychotherapist from best-selling author based in Devon. So there are the recommendations encapsulated in the article by Anna Bonnet. I think there's some interesting things there, and I think that an interesting sort of add-on to that from the scientific world is some research in China, which says when you listen to music, you tend to blink in time with the music that you listen to.
Oh.
So that's one for you
guys. Get blinking to this then. Get blinking to this and keep talking by Pink Floyd.
Oh, sounds great.
Great stuff. We'll speak to you Monday, Paul. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Bye.
What are you?
Interesting. I keep talking about Pink Floyd. RPG was giving us tips to relax yourself. Great stuff. You're listening to Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital in South Yorkshire, sheffieldlive.org. We should have Phil Muffett on the line. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
And how are you? Are you under the stairs?
I'm in my office under the stairs.
In the office under the stairs. Yeah, for good behaviour. Now, for people who don't know who you are, Phil, if that's possible, you are a member of Maxwell and Swinton Astronomical Society.
Yes.
And we're lucky enough because there's five Saturdays in November. We get you on this week and we get you on next Saturday because you're doing the first Saturday of the month. So we've got so much to talk about. So next week, for people who are listening, you're going to be covering your highlights of 2025, looking forward to 2026, and even perhaps some Christmas gift ideas.
We can squeeze that in, I'm sure.
There's so much excitement. But today we need to talk about what you've been up to, photographing in particular.
Okay.
Oh, are you there?
I'm here.
So, So you sent me a picture of what I think is the C2025 K1 Atlas comet, which in August was a smudge, but he's now looking better. Is that correct?
Yes. It was really, really difficult to photograph. Was it back in August?
Yes, I think you said August.
I think it was discovered in May, earlier on this year. And it was a hard object to photograph because it was kind of face on towards the Earth. So it was more like a smudge than what you get your classical comets with a big tail. So effectively the tail was pointing away from us, so we couldn't really see it, to be honest. So it's just a matter of perspective as it flies around the solar system. But as time's gone on, the comet's moved around past the sun and it's now going up north, where everything's better. And it's going to be going out of the solar system. The tail has started to swing round, so we can see the tail developed. I photographed magnitude 13 comets before. Well, I've tried to, and to be honest, I've not been able to see them. This one's got quite a bright nucleus, and I can also see quite a nice little tail on it as well. So it's not massive because it's like travelled so far away from us now as it's starting to leave the solar system, but it's bright enough to be able to see.
And we've had clear skies, haven't we, as well?
We've had I was really lucky on Tuesday. I've been planning and following it across the sky, and it fragmented last month. So it's been around the sun, and it's a fresh comet that's coming from the Oort cloud. We talked about the Oort cloud.
Oh, we did. You did an astro clinic on that, didn't you? Oort cloud.
It was back in 2022, I think it was. We talked about it, which seems it sounds a long ago. And it's coming from the Oort cloud, being around the sun, and the astronomers expected it to actually disintegrate and perhaps not come around the back of the sun. But it survived the solar passage. But as it's been going out of the solar system, it started to break up into bits. Now, one of the things about comets is a lot of people think they're like just a single object. But as we've sent satellites and probes to different asteroids and comets, what we're discovering is they're not one specific solid object. A lot of these asteroids and comets are made up of multiple bodies that are kind of held together gravitationally, and then there's like rocks and dust and ice, the glue that kind of hold it all together. So when past the sun, the radiation from the sun melts the ice, and basically that's blasted off into space and it takes the dust with it, and that's how we get a tail. Now, if the glue or the gravity pulls it apart, that's when we start to see different bits. So this one specifically is broken into three individual heads. So it's now like A, B and C. So it's actually C 2025, K1A, K1 B K1C.
Oh.
So it's actually three bodies now. So, yeah, it's fallen to pieces. Now, when I did the photograph on Tuesday, I can't actually see three individual components. I'm not sure exactly how far they've split apart because I've just got a snapshot. So the fragments might still be in the photographic coma that I've got. If it is, they're still quite close together. But because they're travelling through space, in a trajectory, they're kind of falling in a line. So it's really interesting.
So why is it called Atlas then, Comet? Is that somebody who's discovered it, seen it first, or...?
The Atlas.
Is that what this is called, or is it...?
The Atlas. Or are you thinking of the Three-Eye Atlas?
Oh.
The Three-Eye Atlas is the interstellar comet that's come from outside of our solar system.
Ah.
And it's flown past the sun, which is a different topic. So this year, there's been three really good comets. So we had, which is the C2025 A6 comet. So that was discovered by the Mount Lemmon Survey in Arizona. That was right back in January. And then we had the K1 comet, which we've been photographing, and it's broke up. But the real star of the show is actually the Three-Eye Atlas. And the Atlas stands for the Asteroid Terrestrial Impact Last Alert System.
Ooh.
So that's been designed and built so that we can watch out for near-Earth asteroids passing by, a bit like Armageddon scenario, where it's going to come so close to the Earth it might impact.
Ooh.
So because the cameras and telescopes tuned into near-Earth objects and solar system objects, we're picking up far more of these objects. And it just turns out this is the third one, the third interstellar one we've discovered. So the first one was back in 2017. That was Oumuamua. And then we found Borisov in 2019. And then Atlas we found this year. Now, there's been a lot of speculation on the internet that it's a spaceship from a different galaxy.
Oh, I say.
Solar system. Whatever you do, don't listen to fake news because it's driving me nuts. And the other thing is, there's also NASA are holding back information that they should be telling people. Why NASA have to have all the information is just a fallacy. There's lots of other observatories all around the world that are photographing
and sharing stuff online as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of fake news about this object and NASA and withholding information and that it's into an intergalactic spaceship. It's not. It's a big rocky body. It's a big rocky body that's passing through our solar system. There's nothing unusual about it other than which is the only third one we've ever seen, and that's because our equipment is so much better than it used to be.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So I'm sorry to upset everybody's...
Yeah, fake news, but you know you've
mystery. Mystery. No, I'm sinking it.
So this comet you've been photographing, this C2025 K1, the ABC one. You said somebody from Mexican Swinton Astronomical Society lives in Spain, and apparently has he got better pictures than you, Phil?
Well, I don't know yet. Well, his pictures are always better than mine.
Oh,
he does longer exposures. So there's something called image stacking. So a couple of our members are quite good at this. So they take lots of short exposures and then they run it through a computer program. Basically, the computer kind of makes a long exposure and it takes out any movement and edits it so that it comes back with a cleaner, more in-depth image. But while I'm really good at seeing stars, the faint stuff like the nebula, and gas clouds, I'm really struggling with at the moment. I'm still developing my system so I can take longer and longer exposures. I've also got the limitations in my back garden, but to be honest, this software, you can kind of eliminate some of the lighting problems. So that's where I'm going to be next year with a bit of luck. in the line I'm progressing on. But I can do nice short exposure. I think stars and planets. I'm struggling with the galaxies and I'm struggling with the comets, but I am getting better.
So is that
Trevor will be a big bit of a little bit brilliant.
So when you say you're getting better, how much is your personal development and how much is I need or I want something that'll help me? For my telescope.
The gear I've got is fine. In fact, we were doing an evening at the observatory last night. We had like 20 people up there at the public, and we were showing them around the sky, and we were talking about equipment. And to be honest, you don't need a big telescope. What you need is a good motor drive, and you need some really good editing equipment on your computer.
Yeah.
You want a really good CCD camera. Fit into your eyepiece, and it will revolutionise. It will transform your observing experience.
Yeah, because when you see things, you want to photograph them, don't you? You've gone into that realm, haven't you? You're more interested now in not just seeing things, but actually recording them.
Yeah. So the problem is with eyepiece. I've got a lovely set of eyepieces. I've got lots of different types and sizes. The problem I have is, no matter how good your eyepiece is, with the streetlight pollution in an urban environment, I hit a wall. Now, when you start using photographic equipment, it starts to see past of that muck, and you can also edit it out on software as well. So, people take what's called lights and dark images. So one of the things you do when you're doing a photographic run, you'll put your lens cap on your telescope or your camera and take an image of the inside of your telescope so you can see what pixels are hot and cold and what's not working, and your computer will remember which pixels are wrong. And then you take a light picture, so you've got a white image, and what you do is that will also sort out your kind of the field, and it'll highlight what's light and dark in your film. And then when you edit your images and you stack them together, what you can do is you can add those into your picture, and your computer will be able to remove the light and dark pixels that either are overworking or underworking or not working, and it will produce an image without all those defects in it. And basically you can clean your picture up. So it's really good.
Amazing. But you know about this dark skies issue? I read something only last week about there's quite a lot of places in North Yorkshire that have got dark sky status. And there's three more, like Goathland and places like that, have just got achieved that. And it's a community thing, and they all have to contribute, and they have to survey and work out where all the light pollution's coming from, and change lights and change angles of lights. And they're saying, in the North York Moors, you can see the stars, you can often see the Milky Way, you can see, the Northern Lights and stuff like that. And you need that in Rotherham, Phil, don't you?
Well, we can see, we're from Uber, that's kind of our dark sky area.
Yeah, where your observatory
you can't see the way. Some nights are better than others. And a lot of it's down to the atmosphere and pollution as well. But to be honest, the pollution in South Yorkshire, it's not a lot.
No, compared to, you know,
I can remember as being young, I didn't know how far I could see. And that might sound bizarre, but I could never see the horizon in South Yorkshire. Never see the horizon. And I didn't know how far I could see. And it's only as with the pits and steelworks have gone and cleaned up, you can actually see a phenomenal distance. From Hoover Stand in the middle of South Yorkshire, we can see York Minster, and you can also see Lincoln Cathedral.
Yes, which is unbelievable. But you're showing your age here, Phil, now, because the Clean Air Act, as Sheffield was ahead of its time, they were the first to do the Clean Air Act, because you imagine we had a lot of industry.
But it was still dirty.
Yeah, but you couldn't see. One of my cousins worked in Attercliffe, and she said, if I walked down the street with a white shirt on, by the time I got to my office or where she worked, the shirt was black. So you can't believe that now, can you?
No, you can't believe it.
It's
true, though. It's real true. If you see old photographs of Sheffield from Meadowbank area, and it overlooks steelworks and the power station, it's like you can see the grime in the air. And the other thing is, if you see, I recently saw some photographs of old Sheffield, and you see people on the street with hardly no shadow. And there's no shadow because the sunlight wasn't strong enough with the smog to produce a decent shadow. It was like a bit of a hazy kind of dark patch because of the smog.
It's unbelievable. And you know, you must be quite miserable today because of the weather. Because this isn't observing weather, is it?
It's not. Well, as we discussed last month, it's been really bad. I've not had half a dozen nights.
Well, it's been, and that's all to do with the weather, isn't it? Yeah.
Managed an hour on Tuesday. Suddenly,
yeah, of course, and the temperatures as well, isn't it? I'm going to have to let you go soon, Phil, because we've got the film showing, but we're going to speak to you next Saturday.
Yes. Lovely.
Excellent. Thanks for talking to us, Phil.
Lovely.
And next week, remember to have a great list of your highlights of 2025 and what you're looking forward to in 2026. Oh. Well, okay, 2026 is going to be better. Bye-bye, Phil. Bye-bye.
Okay, see ya. Bye.